Have you noticed that politicians struggle to enact the things they run on? That regardless of who wins elections, lawmakers cannot pass whatever legislation they like? This is the Overton window at work. The idea, coined by the Mackinac Center's Joe Overton, describes the range of ideas that are politically possible at any one time. And on the Overton Window podcast, we look at how ideas go from being unthinkable to plausible to policy and talk to the people who change what is politically possible. Now, people have been trying to get a piece of land of a country and let it play by different rules and laws to see if the differences can generate prosperity for its people. And indeed, the flukes of history and conquest like Singapore and Hong Kong have delivered impressive results. So why not Detroit? Rod Lockwood is the author of Belle Isle, Detroit's Game Changer. He is a developer and board chair of my organization, the Mackinac Center. Rod, welcome. What would you like to do with this island?
Like to turn it into a special economic zone, the first in the United States. It would have a large degree of autonomy with regard to taxation and regulation, and would attract capital and people, not only from Detroit and from Michigan and from the U.S., but from all over the world. The vision is to take this island. Right now, it's the state's largest state park. It's under lease from the city of Detroit. It's approximately about 1,000 acres, 1.5 square miles, and is largely underutilized. Beautiful location, a beautiful park, but only a small fraction is actually being used for picnics and swimming and fishing and that kind of activity.
Yeah.
So
they've got a pretty cool conservatory there, one of the most gorgeous lighthouses I've ever seen, but like an abandoned zoo, just some not necessarily well-maintained woods, a lot of empty space too.
Right. Yeah. The you mentioned the zoo, James, that used to have a nice small zoo, I guess, I understand, even had an elephant. But as the city's budget issues became dire, the zoo was shut down and no longer operates.
So why do you think a special economic zone would be attractive?
Well, to make it attractive, we need to go back to the fundamentals of human incentives. And if we want people to be productive, to make products and services, to make them affordable, we don't want to tax work. If we want people to take their capital and investment in the tools to enable products and services to be affordable, we don't want to tax investment. So those are the two basic fundamental rules that need to be a part of special economic zone.
Now, of course, you're saying we don't want to tax investment. We don't want to tax labor. You do have a tax, though. It's the land value tax.
Yeah, we have the tax, right. Yeah, there has to be a tax. We have to operate the city, which has to, we have to keep the streets clean and the emergency services available and the utilities there and running properly and operates, in this case, in my vision, having a monorail being the mass transportation form on that one, cost of operating the monorail. So getting back to, again, the human incentive side of taxation, we don't want to take the current real estate tax norm in the United States where most cities and states, municipalities tax the total land and improvements that are on that particular parcel. So you buy a piece of property and then you build a home on it or whatever, you're taxed on the value of the structure and the land. Even though government bears no risk or does not offer a value for your building. If it burns down, they don't come in and replace it for you. Your insurance company does. So you pay the insurance premium. So you and your insurance companies are the risk takers on the improvements. My plan here on Belle Isle, in order to encourage people to go vertical, is to tax only the underlying land value.
Yeah, so this is an old idea. It goes back to Henry George. And part of this is like, the idea is like that you really can't avoid a land value tax. It's there. The land is valuable because of its social benefit. And, it doesn't discourage development on it. You either have to move out or pony up.
Well, the fact that we tax improvements is really a wealth redistribution scheme, and it doesn't make sense.
Well, I do want to come back to this because the land value tax actually has a special development in the city of Detroit itself. But I want to talk more about the proposal and your vision for this island. So special economic zone, you've got some ideas for its governance structure. Who's going to move in there?
Sorry, who's going to what?
Who's going to move to the island?
Well, we would, once we have the entitlements, the authorization to go ahead, we would have a marketing program, which would be where we'd have marketing efforts all over the world. So we'd market in the major cities in Asia, in South America, in Europe, so forth. And our pitch would be towards the younger entrepreneurial type who has a business or has developed a product which has some success in his or her local market and now has the vision to move into the world's largest economy with that product. The ideal spot for this, we'll pitch our young entrepreneur, move to Belle Isle, live on the island, live there a majority of the year, be a rural resident, and then go across the river to the mainland in Detroit, in this area I call Jefferson, being that's the main road there, and build your manufacturing plant there, and then fly your product or ship your product to the coast from there. So Michigan in the Midwest has been labeled the flyover area of this country, but it could become the fly from area, being more centrally located to the major North American market.
So I want to cover one other bit of the structure of this is that people would have to pay for the privilege of buying land in this time.
Yeah, they would put some numbers to it to encourage Detroit to give us this access, and probably from a political standpoint, rather than buy the island, we would want to enter into a long-term lease with the island with a substantial down payment. That down payment I'm proposing is $1 billion. That's what would it be. And then we need to spend another $4 billion approximately for the on-island infrastructure. That would be for the sewer, the water, the paving, the monorails, and the utilities. Then we need to cover those costs and provide a reasonable return to the investors that put up that money to the investment group. And let me back up here and just say one thing, that this would be totally privately funded, be not a dime of government money required to execute this plan. Which, by the way, in our conversations in D.C., we're getting very warm reception when we mentioned that fact. Mm-hmm. So another $4 billion on the public infrastructure, people would have to purchase you might call it a resident medallion or whatever term you want to use, to enable them to become a resident. And then they would buy their home, their residence, or condominium or whatever, be over and above that.
All right. So the before you can start selling land in the area or selling these medallions, you've got, or convince people to sell these medallions, you've got to convince some people at the federal government level, and I assume the state government level, and at the local government level, because it is the city of Detroit proper who owns the island that you want to develop. Why should they say yes?
Well, the reason the local government should say yes is that Belle Isle, a city of 50,000 people, would require, by our calculations, about 46,000 workers to work on the island. The majority of those workers would probably live in Detroit or live off the island, and then commute onto the island and perform the services of being in the hotel, the restaurants, the office, the shops, and so forth. The employment increase is really a major factor in why the Detroit community should support this. And then you have, in addition to the direct employment of
and
folks who
just to put some, on the island, put some context in here. I believe employment in the city of Detroit's more than 300,000, fewer than 400,000. So, you know, 46,000 people would be a huge gain for the city.
Right. Well, and that's not all of it either. Mm-hmm. Now, the 46,000 go back and they spend money and other things in the city, which creates additional employment. I think the term is called induced employment. So between the prime employment and the induced employment, there would be many, many thousands of additional jobs created.
Oh, sure. But there's also a more direct financial benefit because you would have to pay the city government to lease the island, right?
Right, right. Yeah, we would, we've done the budgets about the island operations, what it costs to actually operate the island, and that's a number of around $300 million per year. But with the land tax, and there'd also be a sales tax that would mirror Michigan's sales tax, so we'd have a 6% sales tax and then the land value tax. Between those two, we would probably generate about double that $300,000 number, maybe even more.
Really?
The excess, we would plan to split it down the middle with retaining part of it on the island for reserve for replacement and other improvements, and then the other half going to the city of Detroit and the state of Michigan. So providing a direct benefits of the excess tax generated by the island.
Is that the benefit for the state of Michigan then?
Yes, yeah.
And
yes, and that would be the reason that the Lansing would have an incentive to vote for.
Yeah, the other one's the federal government. They have yet to do any special economic zones in the United States, at least as far as I know. What would they get out of it?
What do they get out of it?
Yeah,
well, they would get out of it the on-island employment, the reduced employment, all those folks would be paying the full fare of the federal income tax. So there would be most likely a net revenue benefit to the city, provided that we can bring people from outside the country to some degree to live on Belle Isle, which I'm sure we can do.
And that's the important thing, is that for the federal government's fiscal policy situation, they have a federal income tax. You're going to let the residents of this island not pay that federal income tax. So moving people from Miami or from San Francisco to Belle Isle is a net negative for the federal government, but attracting people internationally would be a positive.
Yeah. We'll say, well, this is going to become a billionaire's tax haven, but frankly, a true billionaire, they make so much money after tax, and they're not going to move. There's no incentive. So the people that do move from within the United States are not the billionaires. They're the people of a lesser income group. And they would be joined by people from outside the country, who aren't, of course, currently paying any income tax to the United States.
All right. So what I think is unique about this proposition, of course, compared to like a lot of the policies that I deal with on a daily basis, is that it's in fun. Like, yes, you do need policy change. Yes, you do need to convince the city to make a deal with you, the state to make a deal with you, and the federal government to make a deal with you. But fundamentally, this is a business proposition. It's going to be driven by investors in response to unique policy environment that you have to create. You got to show the people in Detroit that they're going to come out ahead. You got to show the state they're going to come out ahead. You got to show the federal government they're going to come out ahead. And then you've got to convince all the people that will want to live here that they should want to live here, and that they're going to benefit from it. And this is very different from a, you know, if you pass the laws, they will come kind of approach. Like, well, you know, I support a lot of good policy, but I can't, but I'm, after we pass that policy, I don't know that I need to like sell it to a real estate developer. So what are the advantages of having a product to sell?
Well, if we had a special economic zone with the same rules on green lands, it would fail. Okay. So we have to put it in a place that actually has a culture. And Detroit has that. Detroit has the beautiful downtown buildings. It has the four professional sports teams. It has the finest athletic club in the country. It has opera. It has the DSO. It has the Arc. Detroit has the culture that Greenland, or you take most any other city, doesn't have. So we need to have more than just good policy. We need to have a framework where people will want to come here and become Detroiters, and say, okay, the weather's not the best in the winter, but the rest of it makes up for it.
But it's also that, you are going to be responsible in this case for the broader vision of buying or selling something that specific people are going to have to buy. You might not have to convince all of Congress, but you'll have to convince a governor. You'll have to convince a mayor, a city council, but it's a very limited number of people in addition to all the people that you'd have to convince to buy those medallions and invest in the place.
Yes. To convince or to reach out to those areas we think are going to be the toughest to convince first. And those are the federal government because of our taxation plan, and then the local government because of the national NIMBYism that we have. I mean, all communities have. And NIMBY is for...
Not in my backyard.
Not real estate, not in my backyard. And you could also take the phrase, don't take away our jewel. Okay, so we have to work at both levels first. Now, if we can convince the people in D.C. That this is a great thing for to save the country's poorest city and bring it back to towards where it used to be, and provide a template which can be repeated in other legacy cities that have fallen on hard times, then that's the reason for D.C. to do it. at the local level here, it's totally economics, local economics, job creation, uplifting people out of poverty and make a better life.
So, and I know there are a lot of attempts to do charter cities, to do special economic zones, to say, look, we want to try out a new policy and legal environment, and we think that this is going to be an attractive thing to help generate prosperity for an area. And there have been many attempts at these things going back to, I don't know, say the 70s, to wrench away land in order to develop a new city that plays by different rules. But it's been hard. Why has it been so hard?
Well, you have, I think, two reasons. One is that it's hard to make the political case in many areas. So let's say we're trying to do an SEZ right next to Austin, Texas. Well, Austin, Texas doesn't need an SEZ. It's growing anyway. So it'd be hard to convince people to say there's a need for Texas to have an SEZ. Now, Detroit, on the other hand, everyone can see, because the numbers are all out there, that this is a city that has a dire, dire need. It's lost two-thirds of its population. Even the last decade, the census decade, lost 10% of its population just in the 2010 to 2020 period. There's a dire, dire need for Detroit.
It's the poorest big city in America. And it's not even, not especially close.
Yeah, right. It's far more poor than any other city. So, you know, that's a compelling reason. Now, if or when, I'm going to be more positive, when Belle Isle occurs and turns Detroit around, that can be pointed to by those of us on the free market side to say, look, what can happen that we saved the dying patient who was near death, and we brought it around, and now it's a vibrant community. If we were to do this again in a area that where the patient was just had a fever and wasn't terminal, it wouldn't be as compelling in a demonstration of the social laboratory.
So, where do you think these sovereignty experiments fall within the Overton window right now?
Well, James, that's a really good question. I guess if I were interviewing you, I'd be asking you that question.
that's the thing. You're going to find out.
Right. And I guess another question or would be, is the Overton window fixed in its size, or does it get a little broader?
Well, I would say, as a general thing, is that if someone just said, "I want to do this," "I think this is a good idea," nothing would happen. I mean, that's just clear. There has to be for anything to change, you have to have these conversations. You have to talk with the people who make the decisions. You have to understand the incentives that they're facing. You have to overcome their objections. I mean, this is basic sales, and your pitch is like, it's not that many people you have to convince: city council, governor, president, maybe Congress. I don't know the legal structure for all of that, but. I mean, obviously, you've seen that there are a lot of people who are really skeptical of the idea. There are a lot of people who really think that these special economic zones, these sovereignty experiments, can pay off and have huge ramifications for the economy as a whole, and to improve prosperity, not just in Michigan, but all around the world. So it's not an immediate thing, I guess I'd say it's going to be a lot of work. I assume you know that.
Yeah, it will be a lot of work, sure. And As far as the approvals, we have draft legislation already at the federal level. And it's being presented next week to some of the folks we're meeting with who have asked for it to review it. We will need a vote of the House, the Senate, and the President in D.C. We will need most likely a vote of the House and the Senate and the governor in Michigan, and at the Detroit level, either city council, the mayor, or probably more likely a voter referendum, which brings you, by the way, to the recent poll done by Mitchell Communications that was released yesterday, which shows that Detroiters favor the Belle Isle project by 68%, a net 41% margin of the favorables over the unfavorables. In Michigan, the numbers were a net 19% net favorable among Michiganders. You know, among the Michiganders, many of them have never even heard of Belle Isle, so you know, they're a lot more undecided. But it has favorable, among Detroiters, it's highly favorable. So if we do meet resistance from the elected officials in Detroit, we'll fund a referendum.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's how you change things. You have an idea, you see where it goes, you encounter resistance, you find ways to push through the resistance, deal with that. Because, like, right now, I think probably find out that the answer is no, it's clearly outside of the Overton window. But when you start working on it, when you start convincing people, when you start, you know, taking their objections seriously and showing that, no, this really can be a good idea, just let's follow through, it can. And by the way, like, there have been a number of very popular attempts to build new charter cities. That's what the Epcot Center was, the experimental prototype city of tomorrow, I think is what it was called. Which, of course, didn't become a city by itself, but it did have a monorail.
Basically, multicultural amusement park, what it turns out to be.
Yeah.
And nobody lives there.
Yeah. Although there were some other experiments in sovereignty there from the state level, too, because they had to set up a number of specific special cities, different things within the Disney World compound itself. I guess the point being is that there are attempts. There are, the United States is littered throughout history with attempts to make experimental communities. You know, we had utopian socialists, we had the Shakers, and a lot of other people who were trying to do something new. Now, they didn't need changes in federal law in order to get off the ground.
My starting point here with Belle Isle, I said becoming a community, attracting people from other places, particularly all over the world, is I'm looking at it as a salesman. Detroit has declining population, the educational system is broken and has poor results. It's still the second most violent crime in the country. It goes on and on and on. Okay, so those are the negatives. How do we sell through that? What can we offer for people to say, don't, you know, despite those facts, you'll still want to live here? Well, one of the selling points is it's on an island that's going to be safe because the access will be controlled. Yeah, people will be free to come on and off the island, but it will be it will be a defined boundary. And if you look at the successful cities that have really had growth in the recent past, since World War II, Hong Kong, Singapore, so forth, they're all islands. There's a reason for that. The geography is on their side.
Also helps that it is one of those liminal spaces too, and that it's not an island within the country, but bordering Canada as well, at least on the other side of the river.
There's another point of point that the border crossing there, Detroit to Windsor, is I think the most heavily trafficked in the country, or among the most heavily, as far as movement of goods.
Now, I want to come back to the land value tax, because this is something that you proposed for Belle Isle in, was it 2012?
2013.
And 2 years ago, the governor, the mayor of Detroit said, you know, we really should move to a land value tax here in the city of Detroit. We have really high property tax rates and is discouraging investment, and we have a lot of vacant land, and it's kind of unfair that we're taxing one so much higher. Do you think you made a difference there, or is that just someone else coming up with tracing down an idea?
Well, the Mayor Duggan's idea, and I hope he didn't steal it from me. I don't believe he did. But,
well, you can. It's an old idea. It's public. It's public domain.
That's right. Yeah. Maybe we both stole it from Henry George.
Yeah.
But I don't think that would work in existing city as well without a lot of transitional heartache. It's one thing to take a greenfield situation where Belle Isle is and start off in the right way with a land value tax and no tax improvements. When you are taking Detroit, which has a fair amount of vacant land, and now you're going to try to do something there about changing the tax structure, you really run the risk, because of Detroit's poor economy, of simply the folks who own vacant land who are holding on to it on the hopes that things would improve, they simply give it back. And so you might actually, I think you would increase the tax foreclosure rates if you
That winds up with the land in the county's hands. The county already has a ton of land in.
Yeah, right. Yeah. We end up with the Detroit Land Bank. And I think it would accelerate foreclosures. So I don't think that's a solution for, call it the already developed part of Detroit.
That's fair enough. But you do have some other people talking about the same ideas that you're talking about, including some of the policymakers within the city itself.
Yeah.
Well, how do you positive sign?
Yeah. Well, you know, Detroit's problem is really density. 138 square miles. It had almost 1.9 million people at one point, now has 600,000. It's down to about 5,000 people per square mile. Chicago's around 12 to 13,000. Even Chicago's struggling, losing population. Brooklyn's around 44,000 people per square mile. You need to have density to have affordable services. And if you are spread all over, and especially with aging infrastructure, it's just not a recipe for success.
So what are you going to do to try to get this thing off the ground from here?
To introduce legislation at the federal level to convince people at the local level to support it, such that when the feds look back at Detroit and say, you guys want it or not? And the Detroiters say, yes, we do. If we didn't have that, then the feds would not do a cram down. You know, they wouldn't force something on Detroit. That would be politically impossible. When I talk to people about this idea, which I've been doing since I started rewriting the book, you know, over 2 years now, and I talk about the idea, everybody I talked to said, what a great idea. And then they followed by, this will never happen politically. So the issue is not the financial or the outcome of being a success financially. They say the issue is that either Detroiters aren't going to want it, or the feds aren't going to want it, you know, and you're not going to be successful in getting it passed. Well, you know, maybe they're right. I don't know. But I tell you what, James, we're going to give it the best try we can to make it a reality. And until somebody, you know, comes to me and says, you're done, stop, we're going to keep trying. We're going to do our best.
Rod, good luck on your attempts to shift the Overton window.
Well, thanks, James. Good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Overton Window, a podcast from the Mackinac Center. Please subscribe and rate. For more, check us out at www.mackinac.org. That's Mackinac with a C, like the island.